Good afternoon, students. This is Joel, and I'm bringing you a short tape with some special instructions and the reason for this tape is this. Sometimes you read metaphysical writings, sometimes you read metaphysical articles in magazines and wonder why they are not more effective or why you do not get a greater response from them. Also, it may be that you are giving treatments either to yourself or to others and not deriving the benefit, the fruitage that you expect. Of course, remember, I am dictating this only to those who are having this particular need, those who are not getting the full benefits of whatever metaphysical work they are doing for themselves or others. I understand that for many of you, this tape will not be necessary. This also has another purpose. It has been my experience that writing helps to clarify an idea. That is, instead of just thinking about the idea, sometimes I write it out on paper, find that it isn't satisfactory, tear it up, and write it out again. Or just keep writing until whatever the idea is has clarified itself. And also from some experience that you have, you may feel the desire to write an article, a metaphysical article, or an article on the infinite way or on spiritual wisdom. And so, I would like to tell you that there are four essential points that must be included in every treatment you give, and that must be found in every sound metaphysical article that is written. Let me clarify this a moment. I do not mean that every time you are called upon for help, you must think consciously of these four points, since, of course, there will come a time when you will not consciously think of them at all. These points will have become a part of your very being. I might say to the young student in school that when you have a problem of 12 times 12, that you first multiply by 2, and then multiply by 1, and then add the result together, and you will have 144. Of course, you who are out in the world now say no such thing. You don't have to do any such thing. 12 times 12 is 144, and everyone knows that. Well, in just this way, I am saying to you that every treatment must have these four points in it, and yet the day will come when you will get the result without consciously going through the mental rehearsal of these steps. Nor am I limiting a treatment to four points. Actually, a treatment might unfold a dozen points if your attention were on it long enough. But no treatment that has to be given, that you have to be consciously thinking of, no treatment would really be a complete one without including these four points. And no metaphysical article that you could write, and no metaphysical book that you could write, would really be effective in the world without these four points. You may look around the metaphysical field and find hundreds of books which have been printed, most of them with just one printing, and here and there one with two, without including these points. But it won't be long until these books will be out of print and off of the market, except for those that still circulate from the original printing. On the other hand, there are some books that have been printed and published for 20, 30, 40 years. But those you will find include these four steps. And as I said, it isn't that you have to consciously think of these four steps every time you give a treatment. After these four have become part of your being. But if you are beginning in metaphysical study or metaphysical practice, if you are beginning to give treatments, I would suggest that you make these four points bone of your bone, blood of your blood. Make them so much a part of you that you know them as thoroughly as you know that 12 times 12 equals 144. The first point is the nature of individual being. The nature of individual being because of the nature of God. Everything, you know, starts with the nature of God. But if you were to concern yourself only with the nature of God, you would be concerned with something that at least in belief you would be setting aside from yourself, separate and apart from your own being. So whenever you think of the nature of God, think of the nature of God as the nature of individual being. Then you will be able to understand that whatever you find God to be, that is what you must find yourself to be and the self of your patient or friend or relative. This is important. There are too many people who know God as mind, life, truth, love, and so forth, but do not realize that when they are speaking of God, of mind, life, truth, love, spirit, law, they are likewise speaking of their own individual being, since I and the Father are one. So, remember that you must above all things know the nature of God, and because you know the nature of God, you must know that that is the nature of individual being. This realization of oneness, of unity, is more important than you might believe at this moment, because without it, you will be trying in some way to bring the nature of God to the individual, instead of realizing it as the very nature of individual being. When you realize that the nature of God is the nature of individual being, you will not be seeking employment or companionship or solving any human problem. But as the problem arises, you will realize, here we come to number two. You will realize that the error, regardless of the form in which it appears, sin, sinful habits or tastes, desires, disease, lack, unemployment, fear, regardless of the form of the error that presents itself to it, its illusory nature. I have before me two beautiful bookends, a pair of bookends, hand carved of some Chinese marble. And they are very heavy. Very, very heavy to lift. The question is, are the bookends heavy or is the marble heavy? And you say, what's the difference? Since the bookends and the marble is one. Ah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. The quality of the marble is the quality of the bookends, because the bookends is merely a form of marble. So all that marble is, bookends must be. The weight of marble is the exact weight of the bookends, because there's no place where marble leaves off and bookends begins. They are one. So with our relationship to God. God is the substance or essence, and we are the form. And therefore, whatever we find the nature of God to be, that is the nature of our individual being. So, when an appearance of error comes to us, knowing that this is not included in the Godhead, how can it be in the Godhead in manifested form? If it isn't in and of God, it isn't in and of individual being. And so even though the error exists as an appearance, we know that it is an illusory appearance without substance, without cause and without law. And so you see, the second part of your treatment and the second point that must be included in any metaphysical article you write, and it should be in every one you read, concerns the unfoldment, first, of the nature of God as individual being, and second, of the illusory nature of the error, regardless of the form in which the error appears. Turning to our own writings, we have such examples of oneness as Lake Erie and Niagara Falls, of the sun and the sunbeam. And the mahogany and the mahogany table, or, as I have just illustrated, the marble and the marble bookend. And also in the writings, we have such examples of the illusory nature of error as the water that seems to be on the desert road, or the tracks that come together, or the snake in the rope, or the white poodle that has no existence at all outside the hypnotic suggestion of the hypnotizer. All of these examples are reminders to us that we are not dealing with error as a form or reality, or that which has a cause or law, but with an appearance utterly devoid of substance, law, or cause. This leads naturally up to the third point of the treatment, or third point that must be included in your article. When you have known the truth about the nature of God as individual being and the nature of error, you have known the truth that constitutes treatment or prayer. So all that I have up to now on this tape been knowing and declaring about the nature of God as individual being and about the nature of error constitutes a knowing the truth, which in its turn constitutes a treatment or prayer. So you see, the third point is the fulfilling of the first two points. Having taken due notice of these three points, you have, in a very brief form, the correct letter of truth, the correct form of a treatment, the correct knowledge that constitutes knowing the truth that will make you free. But remember this, you have not yet come to that which really brings about the healing. It is on this fourth point that many lose the effects of their good work because of their ignorance of the fact, or forgetting of the fact, of the importance of this fourth point. Please remember, point number 4. Truth must be realized. So, when you have consciously known the truth of point 1 and 2 and 3, you have known the truth, you have given your treatment, you have voiced your part of prayer, but now comes a very, very important point. I would not say the most important, because without these first 3 points, the 4th may do you no good. On the other hand, knowing the first 3 without the 4th may do you no good. So let us agree that all 4 points are essential. And the 4th is the realization of truth, the conscious awareness of truth, the consciousness of truth itself. And this is attained in this manner. After you have consciously known your first, second, and third points, then comes your period of listening for the still small voice. Then comes your period of speak, Father, thy servant heareth. This is your opportunity to be alert, to have your inner ear attuned so that the Father within may address itself to you. The Father within may unfold and disclose and reveal itself, or the activity of the Father within may be made manifest to you. So the 4th point is that having given your complete treatment of the first 3 points, sit quietly for 1 or 2 or 3 minutes, or 4 or 5, in the attitude of speak, Father, thy servant heareth, a listening attitude. No room here for falling asleep, because you're listening, you're listening, you're waiting for something to come in on your line. You're waiting to hear with your inner ear. You may not hear in words, but you will feel something that convinces you of the divine presence. You will feel the click, or a sense of release, or a feeling of confidence. You will receive some assurance that God is on the field and all is well. Of course, I would not have you believe that these few words constitute all there is to be known about spiritual wisdom. I am summarizing more especially for the beginner the 4 points which, when embodied in consciousness, when studied and practiced over a long period of time, unfolds, develops that state of spiritual consciousness which is a healing consciousness. When that comes, you can tear up these notes. You can throw away your books. You will then be at the point of receptivity, receiving always your understanding, your power, your wisdom from within. Do not be in too much of a hurry to burn down your schoolhouse or burn up your school books. Do not be in too much of a hurry to do away with the correct letter of truth, with the knowing of truth, with the giving of treatment. Do not try to be too absolute too soon. If your understanding does not include the first point, the nature of God as individual being, you will continuously be trying to bring the attributes and qualities and activities of God to man, to individual being, to your patient or student or yourself. Whereas when you have the understanding, of God as individual being, you will be knowing that all that the Father is, I am. All that the Father hath is mine. And your prayer or realization will be directly in line with the truth that nothing can be added to you or to any individual, and nothing can be taken from you. The individual is complete in God. The individual is already about the Father's business. The individual is consciously one with the Father. And all that the Father hath is already in and of individual being. Only in the realization of God as individual being can you be spared the mistake of trying to bring good to the individual. In the same manner, if you are not certain about point two, the illusory nature of error, you will be trying to remove sin or disease or fear or lack from some individual, and you will never succeed. Never will you succeed, actually, in healing, saving, or enriching anyone. The real secret is knowing the truth of their already infinite spiritual being. But if you think of error, if you think of some form of sin or lack or disease as something that must be got rid of, something that you must rise above, something that you must correct or change, you will not be anywhere in line with the message of the infinite way. You will not be anywhere in line with any of the revealed spiritual truth, which is a revelation of the true nature of God as individual being, of the true nature of the individual as being constituted of God. Let me make this very clear. Too many people, even in the metaphysical world, and all of the people in the theological world, are trying their best to get God to do something about poor, sick, and sinful man. They are not succeeding. They haven't succeeded in all these thousands of years. You won't succeed if you continue to try to bring God to heal something, remove something, overcome something. You will be back in old theology, regardless of what you call your faith and confidence. Now, the point I am making here is this. God is not a power to be used to heal sickness, sin, or death, or lack. God is an infinite power, the infinite power, the only power. So God is not to be used upon or over any other power, but rather the Christ revealed within you that there is no power but God, and that any seeming power, regardless of its form or nature, can only be of an illusory nature, non-real, unreal. Until you see, point two, the illusory nature of error, the why and the wherefore of it, alone can save you from the horrible experience of trying to get God to do something for you or your patient or relative. Your realization must be that God already is about God's business. God already is functioning as God, as law, as substance, as life, as peace. Your only function as a student of spiritual wisdom is to know that God is. God is functioning. God is caring for its own. God's work is done. And there's no way to do this if you are still believing that error in some form or other can only be removed or healed or improved by getting the help of God. Man cannot influence God, so don't try. But if the Christ has touched you, it is revealing to you that God already is. And thus you will know that the nature of error, regardless of its form, must be an illusory nature, an illusory form. And you will not try to coerce God into doing something about it. When you are so certain that God constitutes individual man's being, you will not be looking for any troubles to remove. When you are certain of the illusory nature of that which appears as evil, even under death itself, you will not be looking for any God to do anything to any form of error. Then you really will be living a treatment. You will not merely be voicing it or declaring it, as you must do in the earliest stages of your practice, but you will be living it. You will be living and moving and having your being in the conscious realization of this entire treatment. Your life will be a prayer. Your life will be a treatment. But above all, your life will be a prayer. You will be living prayer instead of declaring prayer. And this does constitute the third point, the nature of treatment or prayer. In the earliest stages, remember, do not hesitate to declare these truths, to affirm them, to remember them at every possibility, until they become so much a part of your being that ultimately you do not declare them, you do not state them. You are a living witness of them. That's what it means to be a witness of God. You are a living witness to God's allness and the nothingness of error when the first two points are realized. Then and then only can you say that your life is a prayer, that you pray without ceasing. It really is a wonderful thing to live a life of prayer without the need of declaring it, affirming it, just as you need not declare or affirm every day that you love your family. As a matter of fact, pretty soon they don't believe the words, they believe the action. They believe the conduct. And so after a while, you won't even believe when you hear treatment or prayer in words, because you will be so much a living prayer that you will know the meaning of deep silence. It is along about that time, after you have for a period consciously known and declared and stated and written the truths of the first 2 points, that these truths become so much a part of your nature that you no longer affirm and deny, state, or think such thoughts, but you pass automatically from living the life of prayer into that fourth step, which is a constant realization of the kingdom of heaven on earth. It is in this fourth step that you touch the fourth dimension of life, in which you do not live in an atmosphere of persons or things to be corrected or healed, but rather you live in an atmosphere of God's children. You completely move out of the consciousness of a human world, and you become so imbued with God's truth that you're a continuous witness to God's universe, God's law, God's substance, God's being. This takes me now to a point about which you will hear much more in 1954 than you have heard in 1953. And that is the secret of the Bible. I discovered the secret of the Bible. You will find it in my book, Spiritual Interpretation of Scripture. I do not know, truthfully, whether anyone else had ever discovered that secret. I do not know of it in spiritual literature. I am beginning to hear of it now. I wish that all of our students could learn it thoroughly. Every book of the Bible is a revelation of the presence of that which we call Christ, the Spirit of God, in man. It is omnipresent in man, this Christ, this Spirit of the law of God, but Only those of spiritual wisdom have become conscious of it. And so we find Moses aware of this Emmanuel, God with us, divine presence, leading his people out of bondage. Only through the awareness of the presence of that power in him that we now call Christ, the Spirit of God. In every book of the Old Testament, you will find a prophet, a sage, a seer, someone in the religious foreground of the Hebrew people who knew of this divine presence, this divine influence that is within all of us. And you will find that the awareness of it by Moses, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Naomi, Isaiah, Elijah, Jeremiah, their conscious awareness of it performed the particular miracles necessary at that stage of the people's development. The people themselves couldn't bring this about. Only the spiritual seer, sage, saint, prophet, only they knew of this inner, infinite, invisible. And their knowing of it made not only their own individual demonstration, but that of their people. Of course you know that Jesus knew all about this. He called it the Father within. He said that all things were done by this Father within. And he walked on the water with it. He fed the multitudes with it. He healed the multitudes with it. He lifted his disciples above their fishing nets. And of course, Paul worked miracles. John revealed this inner spiritual nature. And so each in his turn revealed to us that there is that within our own being which outwardly makes manifest God's harmony in our experience. In proportion as an individual knows this, he not only completes his own demonstration, but remember, he helps his entire family, community, and oftentimes nations. As you ponder the four points of treatment and prayer, won't you please remember also the secret of the Bible, so that you will know that this light of truth dispels darkness, dispels the illusory sense, and lifts you into a state of consciousness where you find no discords. That is the fourth dimension of life. That is the beautiful stage of life. When you are no longer battling error, no longer overcoming it, no longer fighting it, because there isn't any coming into your experience. And that which you witness as coming to others you so clearly perceive its illusory nature that just your smile dispels it. Thank you. Thank you. I'm leaving for the mainland today from Hawaii and hope to greet many of you in New York City in November 1953. Aloha, this is Joel.